A reading from the Holy Gospel according to Matthew. Glory to you, Lord. When Jesus came to the region of Caesarea Philippi, he put this question to his disciples: who do people say the Son of Man is? They said, some say he is John the Baptist, some Elijah, and others Jeremiah or one of the prophets. But you, said, who do you say I am? Then Simon Peter spoke up. You are the Christ, he said, the Son of the living God. Jesus replied, Simon, son of John, Jonah, you are a happy man, because it was not flesh and blood that revealed this to you, but my Father in heaven. So I now say to you, you are Peter, and on this rock I will build my church, and the gates of the underworld can never hold out against it. I will give you the keys of the kingdom of heaven. Whatever you bind on earth shall be considered bound in heaven. Whatever you loose on earth shall be considered loosed in heaven. Then he gave the disciples strict orders not to tell anyone that he was the Christ. The Gospel of the Lord. Our name is Peter. All the journalists blinked. They thought he was Paul. It did cause some confusion just over 50 years ago when Pope St. John Paul VI, speaking before the World Council of Churches, opened by saying, our name is Peter. Because, of course, we are a church that has both Peter and Paul. Peter the rock, Paul the builder. And, of course, both feature in the readings today. Paul, in that second reading, asks a rhetorical question: who could ever know the mind of the Lord? Rhetorical, is not expecting people to answer. Jesus says to the disciples, who do people say the Son of Man is? And it's not a rhetorical question, he's expecting them to answer, which of course they do. And when the disciples do reply, it's clear that they don't really grasp what he's getting at. That's why he says to them, who do you say that I am? And in a way, it's very similar to that same one that Paul is asking in that second reading. But Simon's the only one who answers, you are the Christ, the Son of the living God. Obviously, we're very familiar with it. It always comes on the feast of Peter and Paul. And most years we get it now, and we get it on weekdays as well. And so he's congratulated on his reply by Jesus and tells Simon that what he understands about Jesus has been revealed to him, not by human men, but by his Father. Simon at last has become fully conscious of what is happening. He knows the mind of the Lord. And that knowledge is that rock that cannot be overthrown. So says Jesus, even by the devilish powers of the underworld, all faith, all authority are built on that rock. And he also tells Simon that he's given him a new name. Who do people say I am? I'm telling you, you are Peter. And he gives him that name, Peter, Petros, is what it is in Greek, because we get the word petrified from it. In Aramaic, it's kephas, a rock. And it means a sort of sturdy, it doesn't mean a little stone, it means probably a boulder, a great big firm rock, huge piece of granite, if it was in Cornwall, of course. And the interesting thing is, there's never a record that it was ever a normal family name, not a Christian name, of course, in those days, but it wasn't a name. It seems that Jesus gave that name, Kephas, Peter, Petros, the rock. And from them on, it becomes, of course, the name. And that's why Paul goes and says, I am Peter. Francis could say the same, of course, today. But it was G.K. Chesterton that wrote, when Christ, at a symbolic moment, was establishing his great society, the Church, he chose for its cornerstone neither the brilliant Paul nor the mystic John, but a shuffler, a snob, a coward, in the word, a man. And upon that man, that rock, he will build his church, and the gates of hell have not prevailed against it, or the emptiness and the kingdoms have failed because of their inherent and continued weaknesses, that they were founded by strong men and upon strong men. This is Chesterton still writing. But this one thing, the historic Catholic Church was founded on a weak man, and for that reason, it is indestructible. The epithets that Chesterton applies with reference to Peter may seem a bit irreverent or scarcely conciliatory. However, Chesterton heightens the tone to ensure that we reflect on a reality that in the eyes of unbelievers or in general, anyone who aspires to understand the church with merely human parameters turn out, in fact, to be scandalous. Namely, that the church is founded on weak men. Or to be more precise, the church is founded taking their weakness into account. When I was reading Chesterton yet again, now I thought, you know, the thing with in Russia at the moment with Putin and the man that's poison, whatever we make of all that, these things happen, don't they? And Belarus and the man that's, he says, strong people, strong. And yet, in the end, they will go like all the rest. But the church continues. And that's Chesterton's saying, is what makes the church distinct from other human institutions that exist in the world, because they're founded without taking human weakness into account. And that's why when we do gather together, you think of most meetings you go to, they don't first say, oh, and since we last met, I'm sorry, these are my sins. But when we come together, we acknowledge where we've been, our weaknesses, our sins. We call them to mind and acknowledge that's what we're like. But that's what Jesus came and can work on and does. That's why he's founded his church on weakness of human nature, because that's what he came to save. And say, let's be presided over by a weak man, just like any one of us. Because what we know, both Peter and Paul, we're very flawed, deeply human, but both experienced that great conversion. Peter gradually seeing who this Jesus was, Paul, of course, that great conversion. Both bearing witness to the fact of the power of the gospel is what changes us, transforms that Peter. Emotional, impulsive, cowardly, but truly also a rock on which the church is built. And that rock of martyrdom that both of them endured, of course, as well, devotion to Christ. So Peter's the first one to see what it's all about and who Jesus really is, and so he becomes the primus inter pares, the first among equals, and remains so even after Jesus' death, resurrection and ascension. The other disciples are aware of this, which is why in Acts chapter 8 they send out Peter, and later on they call him back and ask him to give an account of himself and where he's been going wrong, Acts chapter 11. And it's worth pointing out that the foundation rock that Jesus talks about isn't Peter's personality. It's not our personality. It's his insight. His insight into that faith. And that's what's revealed, not by humans, but God. So Peter's realized, this is God that's with me. And it's his faith. And it's on that he's built, not his personality. So we know what his personality is like. 2 feet, he jumps in. He denies, he runs away, he does all those things. We know all that. So do we. But at the same time, there's that rock. And that's why, you see, when he says it, you'll be taken back to that bit of Matthew, Chernin's Gospel, the end of the Sermon on the Mount. Everyone who listens to these words of mine, says Jesus, and acts on them, will be like a sensible man who built his house on rock. And again, when I was saying this earlier, it was thundering rain. Rain came down, floods rose, gales blew, and hurled themselves against that house. But it did not fall. It was founded on rock. That is our Catholic faith. The faith Let's take weaknesses into account. The faith that acts through grace uses as means our human nature, but in that loving embrace makes the church indestructible, and why the gates of hell have not prevailed against her.